I absolutely understand. It's the big spin. It's damage control. It's what every promoter has said over the years when they lose their biggest star. Because Triple H, you lost your biggest star. And now you think you're a businessman? Well, as a businessman, you truly screwed up, because this is what they call an open and shut case. My client, Brock Lesnar, entered into an oral and binding agreement with your executive vice president, John Laurinaitis, in front of millions of witnesses on live television. And what did you do, Triple H? You arrogantly and defiantly and illegally ripped that contract up. Now that, my friend, is called breach of contract. What I don't get is this. You bring a fighter into an entertainment company, and then you don't like it when he wants to fight? You don't get Brock Lesnar. You don't get the seriousness of this situation. But you do get this. Consider yourself served.
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, and this is SRL on a Monday night.
Welcome to SRL on a Monday night. Monday Night Raw tonight from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, James.
Hey, I'm just happy we're actually here doing an SRL like we said we would.
It's been a while since we've done an SRL on a Monday night.
It's been about 2-3 weeks now. So.
Well, let me just ask you, are you really interested in professional wrestling these days?
I am.
Yeah?
I am. I'm always going to be a fan. It's in my blood.
Is what they're doing working for you?
Honestly? Right now, with the WWE, definitely not, and I will get into it later on as we progress into our show.
Interesting.
I'm telling you right now, tonight's Monday Night Raw, not happy, man. It was a terrible, terrible show, I think, from start to finish.
But... All right, well, we will get into it. It's SRL on a Monday night. To find this show, you got to head on over to www.smacktalkradiolive.com, and if you haven't done so already, you should probably join up at facebook.com/smacktalkradio. And if you're on Twitter, at SRL Radio.
That's right.
Now, where's it from again? What's the stadium here tonight?
It's called the Console Energy Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's where the Pittsburgh Penguins actually play.
That's right.
Kind of interesting. There were some Pittsburgh Penguins in the crowd tonight.
And it's also worth noting that we are 6 nights away from the Over the Limit pay-per-view that is happening this Sunday, May 20th.
Are you going to pay $40 for this pay-per-view, based on what you've seen so far?
No.
I would have to definitely agree with you.
I will be catching it through other methods. So you weren't a fan of what you saw tonight?
No, definitely not. I think that the booking that WWE is doing right now is just, like, ass backwards. And, I mean, let's face it, a 20-minute cry fest from The Big Show?
I really liked that segment,
did
actually.
You?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I was pulling my hair out. It was terrible, terrible.
Well, before we kick the show off, let me just remind everyone, we are looking for your thoughts and opinions on Monday Night Raw tonight. If you have one, email us onair@smacktalkradiolive.com. Once again, that is onair@smacktalkradiolive.com.
That's right. Join the conversation. Again, this is a show by the fans, for the fans. We want to get everybody involved and just create a little bit of a dialogue. That's why we're here in the first place.
And you will also be entered to win a Smack Talk Radio Live hat. We're not going to say you're getting one, but you're going to be entered into a draw for one.
Wow.
Well, we're in limited supply. They've been flying off the shelves.
That's right. You too could own some Smack Talk Radio Live swag. But tonight, Monday Night Raw, I didn't like it. First initial thoughts, Corey, what'd you think?
Well, I wasn't going to be as harsh about it tonight as you were. Oh. But let's start it off here. Raw tonight starts with Triple H being seen backstage wearing an arm brace, and he walks up to John Laurinaitis. Laurinaitis says, you know, 2 weeks ago, Hunter, when we were in the ring together with Brock, I didn't know that Lesnar was going to attack you. I left the ring because I knew you'd stand up for yourself. I got to admit, it was painful for me to watch Brock beat you up and break your arm, but you do have my sympathy. And Triple H responds by saying that what he has to say to John tonight, he's going to say in front of the world, and good luck against John Cena this Sunday.
Because he's going to need it, that's for sure.
John Laurinaitis versus John Cena this Sunday. It's just, to me, it is just a bizarre build to this match at Over the Limit.
It's like a bad version of Austin and McMahon. I mean, we've talked about this on previous episodes of the show, but I don't know. I'm not liking what I'm seeing heading into Over the Limit, that's for sure.
Now, after the Monday Night Raw opening plays, Triple H's music hits, and he walks out into the arena, grabs a microphone, and says, "So everyone wants to know what my thoughts are on Brock Lesnar. It's not the physical part of Brock that bothers me. I've had worse done to me. I'm offended by Brock Lesnar when he says that he needs to bring legitimacy back to the WWE. The day before he came back here, Triple H, he was standing in a ring with 78,000 people around him, going toe-to-toe with The Undertaker. And the whole time, Hunter says he was thinking to himself, oh, I wish someone would come along and make this legitimate."
You know, it's funny. My initial thoughts on the beginning of the show were, here's Triple H saying, you know, I find it insulting that, you know, you want to come back here and say you want to bring legitimacy to the WWE. Well, did you see that brace and that bandage that he was wearing on his arm?
You didn't like that?
Where was that during the Floyd Mayweather fight?
It was there.
Was it?
It was.
I didn't see it. Really? Oh,
you didn't even watch the match.
He didn't have that brace? Yes, I did. He had that brace on?
Yeah, he had it. You just don't really see it. He's actually holding, when he's holding Mayweather's titles, he's holding it with his other arm.
Oh,
with his right arm.
Well, I retract my statement then.
Yeah, no, he was wearing it for sure. But at this point, Triple H does say, "You're offending everyone, Brock, who walks out of that entranceway. And most importantly, you're offending the fans." But he will admit that he was slightly embarrassed because Triple H, along with others, bought into Brock Lesnar's crap. He bought into his hype, the same hype that he bought into in 2002 when he met this incredibly gifted farm boy from Minneapolis who had all this talent and thought he was going to be the next big thing. But when things got tough and he had to fight back in 2002, he quit. And then he went to the UFC. And once there, when someone kicked his ass, when it wasn't so easy and he had to fight back, Brock Lesnar quit again. And then he decided to come back to the WWE in 2012, looked at John Cena, challenged him, gave him everything he could, but Cena beat him. And the next night, he came out, made all these ridiculous demands, and when things didn't go his way, he did what Brock always does. Brock quit.
So he's essentially alluding to the fact that Lesnar is, quit every
time the tough gets
every going, time they go, yeah, the going, going gets tough. Thank you. Say. That's what we should say. Yeah.
What do you make about this?
Honestly, I know they got to keep the whole Triple H Brock Lesnar program and feud at the front of our minds, but did we really need to spend 20 minutes on a match that's going to be taking place 3 months away?
Yeah, they haven't officially announced anything with
Triple H. You know it's going to be happening, obviously. Yeah.
I kind of agree with Triple H here in a sense that the momentum with Brock Lesnar is gone. And every time he does quit, he ups and quits every time. Do I believe that he is gone for good? Obviously not.
Heck no.
But it's just, you know, this guy is supposed to be the dominating force in the WWE. He's supposed to be the monster bad guy, and he's not.
They just killed it. They killed it with that bad booking decision at the end of the last pay-per-view. I mean, it was a great show all the way up until the last 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just...
Do you think this absence of Brock Lesnar on television has anything to do with maybe the fact that he is quite pissed off at the way Extreme Rules ended and he decided that he was going home for a little bit?
No, I don't think it has anything to do. I think that's just what they want you to think.
Mm-hmm.
They want you to think that he's legitimately pissed off. I think they're just obviously keeping him off TV because they've only got
a limited amount
of dates to show him, right?
Okay.
So no, I don't think it has anything to do with Brock Lesnar being legitimately
upset
or pissed off with his role in the WWE. No, not at all.
Okay, well, at this point, Brock Lesnar's music hits. And I didn't think we'd see Brock Lesnar tonight, no. But instead out walks Paul Heyman, and he's with another man.
Immediately, I'm excited because I love Paul Heyman. I've always loved Paul Heyman. He's great mouthpiece.
The big question was who is this other man that's walking down to the ring with Paul Heyman? He was carrying a yellow envelope. I'm immediately thinking lawyer, but we find out here in a couple seconds. Heyman, who has a microphone, says, "I get it. I understand. It's the big spin. It's damage control. What every promoter has said over the years when they lose their biggest star, because Triple H did. And Triple H as a businessman screwed up, and this is an open shut case. Brock entered into a verbal agreement with Laurinaitis in front of millions of people, and Triple H ripped that contract up, and that's called breach of contract. But what Paul doesn't get, though, is you bring a fighter into an entertainment business, and then you're surprised when he wants to fight." The other man who's standing with Paul Heyman, he hands the envelope to Triple H, and Heyman says, "Consider yourself served." And he wants the millions that's owed to him. This is Brock Lesnar. He's speaking on behalf of Brock Lesnar.
On behalf of Brock Lesnar, that's right.
And all Brock is guilty of here is wanting to fight. And that Heyman says that he's glad Brock Lesnar broke that left arm of Triple H's, because it's with the right arm that he's going to be writing this million-dollar check.
And just the looks of animosity between the two. Oh, I loved it, you know. And didn't I call this? Didn't I say that the way this program was going to move forward was it was going to be like through backstage legal wranglings, you know, one person suing another?
Definitely called that one, James.
Oh, yeah. I got to point it out. Whenever I call something, I got to point it out.
All right. So let's talk about this. You know, well, let me just finish off, actually, and then we'll get into it here. When Heyman does say to Triple H that you're going to be writing this million-dollar check, Triple H actually doesn't really hesitate. He just grabs Paul Heyman by the face, and he's staring at him. And Paul is kind of saying, "Don't do it." And Triple H, he kind of backs off. He lets go. He backs off. He walks away. He stops, and he turns around, and he tells Heyman, "You tell Brock Lesnar he's going to get everything he deserves." Triple H's music hits. You would think that it's the end of the segment, but Heyman cuts the music off. He says, "Cut the music." And he says, "Hunter, you just screwed up again. You just put your hands on me. That's assault and battery. And Triple H, I'm going to see you in court."
You know what's funny? And my initial thoughts were, what a difference between the WWE 10 years ago and the WWE today. Because if this were 10 years ago, wouldn't Heyman be on the receiving end of a pedigree?
Well, you'd never even be talking about this stuff out in the middle of the ring.
No, you wouldn't. It's,
I mean, the whole John Laurinaitis character in itself is something that you would never have seen 10 years ago. Do you
sure
know
you
what
would.
I mean?
Yeah, you would.
No, the guy that's Vince hiring McMahon and firing the talent. Well, yeah, you may be right.
Right.
Okay. Well, you know what do you make of this fact that they are talking about open contract negotiations in the middle of the ring with all the fans around? Do you like this idea?
I don't mind it. It's, again, it's part of this new era that they're trying to move the WWE into, this reality era now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, they're trying to move out of the PG era, into this reality era now, where it's, you know, they bring up all the backstage stuff, contract signings, you know.
Does this essentially kill the mystery behind professional wrestling, though?
I think the internet did a pretty good job of that.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, It's tough for me to believe that Brock Lesnar has quit when it's been made public knowledge that he's making $5 million for a 1-year contract, and he has a certain amount of dates. Like, this information is being brought out into the public.
Well, of course. Especially guys like us, you have to be able to suspend your disbelief a little bit.
Of course.
I mean, like, guys like me and you, we're looking on the internet, we're reading the dirt sheets and stuff like that, so we're kind of on top of the game. Well, not as great as we should be, but, you know, we're kind of on top of the game more than, say, the average wrestling fan.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the average wrestling fan, I guess, you know, they don't know that Lesnar's only got 30 dates or he's signed to a $5 million 1-year contract or anything like that.
So are there fans out there who are actually believing that Lesnar's quit and that this lawsuit is actually going down?
Oh, of course. There's got to be probably quite a large number of them.
Interesting. Because I personally would never buy what they're doing. That being said, what Paul Heyman is saying and the way he's delivering it is very convincing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very nice to see a guy who is making wrestling just as believable as Triple H does. These two in the ring together are great.
It's interesting to see Paul Heyman back in the WWE too, because I honestly never thought that, you know, after everything that went down in 2006, I didn't think we'd ever see him back. So
last week you had said on the show that it would be interesting to see how Paul Heyman fares in the new WWE today.
Mm-hmm.
first week back that we've really seen him since his debut, obviously. You know, did he do a good job?
Are you absolutely
convinced that Paul Heyman can still be as effective as he once was?
Yeah, absolutely. I personally thought Paul Heyman was the best part of a Monday Night Raw tonight. I think that he's found a fantastic role being the spokesperson for Brock Lesnar. And it's a great role for him. It's perfect. I mean, all he's got to do is come out and talk. And that's what he's honestly the best at. He's the best at being a mouthpiece. And that's, you know, what the role is that he's got right now, and it's perfect.
Now, what about the idea that, you know, at the end of the segment when Paul Heyman then said that he is going to be suing Triple H for assault and battery because Triple H has put his hands on him?
Well,
here's what I have to say.
I know what you're going to have to say, but you tell everybody else.
Is everything that happens inside the squared circle, can that not be construed as assault and battery?
The attack on John Cena's arm 2 weeks ago comes right blaring to mind.
Everything that happens in wrestling is assault and battery.
Yeah.
So where does Paul Heyman get off thinking that he could sue Triple H?
I don't know. Maybe because he's not a wrestler. I don't know.
And if I'm Triple H's lawyer, my defense is Paul Heyman knew what he was signing up for when he stepped through those ropes. To me, it's a dismissal right away. Yeah. It's a dumb thing. I didn't like how they ended
again, you have to suspend your disbelief a little bit, of course.
Nope, but I won't. I refuse.
Nope. It has to be 100% logical for Corey.
All right, so you, at the top of our show tonight, you had said that you didn't like Monday Night Raw, but the opening segment, you didn't mind?
No, I did like the opening segment. Maybe a little bit too long, but what are you going to do? You have to keep Brock Lesnar fresh in people's minds, obviously, especially with him not making any appearances now probably for a while.
That was going to be my next question. Do we see Brock Lesnar next week on Monday Night Raw?
I don't think so. I think we'll see another interaction maybe between Triple H and Paul Heyman. Actually, I'm guaranteeing we'll see another interaction between those two. But no, I don't think we'll see Brock Lesnar for at least another month.
Let's put our heads together here, because there is no more interaction between these two tonight on Raw. Mm-hmm. What will we see next week?
Next week?
We're going to see Triple H come out and respond to the lawsuit? Yeah,
we'll see him come out and respond to the lawsuit. Maybe he'll come out with a counter lawsuit, maybe countersue Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar.
Or do you think that Triple H possibly comes out and, you know, he brings up the old speech of, you know, the good old days in wrestling where lawsuits were thrown out? Remember last year he had done a speech similar to that where, you know, we don't do lawsuits in the WWE, and we settle our differences in the ring.
Yeah.
Do you think he goes that route?
That's a good point you brought up, actually. That's a good possibility, yeah. I could see that.
But in terms of actually seeing Triple H and Brock Lesnar squaring off, you're saying it's a couple months down the road.
I think it's going to be one of the big SummerSlam matches. I really see the program progressing when we see what happens between John Laurinaitis and John Cena, which we'll get into, of course, later on as we talk more about Raw here. But
does Lesnar and Triple H have the ability to be the main event at SummerSlam if that was where they were going to square off?
Oh, I think they'll be the co-main event. I don't think they'll be the actual main event, but I think they'll probably be like a co-main event.
Okay.
I think whatever match John Cena is going to be involved in, that'll be the actual main event.
Mm-hmm.
But,
interesting.
But no, I don't think it'll be, like, if you're asking me if it's going to be the last match on the card, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm asking.
Well, you know, I could see it. Now that I think about it, actually, I could see that being the last match on the card.
I just feel like this is a long ways away.
Yeah, exactly. Long ways. But you know what? I like that. I like that they're actually taking a respectable amount of time to build a program up, and then you're going to really want to see that match. Like, look at Rock and John Cena at WrestleMania.
Oh, it's living proof that's an effective way to market a match.
Had a year of build-up, and I mean, by the time we were getting to, you know, 6 weeks until the match, I mean, everybody was salivating for that match.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's interesting for sure. It is.
And I mean, we could argue the whole show about, you know, the amount of time that WWE Creative spends on building up their feuds and their programs, right? Because, I mean, as I'm going to talk about a little bit later here, as we get near the end, and I'll explain why I didn't like Monday Night Raw.
Okay.
Like, it's just, I don't know, it seems like they're rushing everything and just booking by the seat of their pants, and stuff just does not make sense. Like, Kane and Zack Ryder being on the pre-show 2 months after their match should have happened, stuff, you know, just crap like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It just doesn't make sense. It's not
logical. You can pick it apart, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I could pick it apart in the most negative way possible. But one thing I definitely wanted to mention about tonight's Raw was, have you noticed how they are coming out with what's trending now on Twitter?
Oh, and it's the stupidest things.
And the phrases that they're saying are trending now.
Like, it's clobbering time? Are you really...
Who's writing that?
That is not trending on Twitter, I'm sorry.
They're just making it up. They want you to use these hashtags, so they're telling you that this already trending. So you can be cool like the thousands of other people that are using this word. I'm sorry, but
no.
that was not trending when it said it's clobbering time.
I hate that. I really hate how they just...
That would be my biggest gripe.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's move on past the first segment.
Yes.
CM Punk, after the Triple H and Heyman exchange, his music hits. Punk walks out wearing his WWE Championship belt. Santino Marella walks out. Cody Rhodes walks out wearing his Intercontinental Championship. And Daniel Bryan walks out. And this sets up a match that Cody Rhodes actually announced earlier today on Twitter. It's a tag team match of CM Punk and Santino versus Cody Rhodes and Daniel Bryan.
Well, the first thing I got to mention about this match was just the amazing reaction that Daniel Bryan got when he came out. I mean, I don't know, man. I think he's probably one of the most over guys or the most over guy in the WWE at the moment.
I think it's living proof what happened tonight during John Cena's exchange near the end.
It's yeah,
no, everyone's chanting it.
Yes, yes, yes. It's they got gold on their hands here. But anyways, this match would start off with CM Punk and Cody Rhodes. It was a little bit of a back and forth chain wrestling between Punk and Rhodes until Punk then would toss Rhodes over the top rope. Bryan at this point would then get in the ring and try to interfere, but Punk would actually toss Bryan over the top rope onto Rhodes. And then he would actually hit the back rope and do a suicide dive onto both of them. Now, it's at this point that Santino would actually come in, and he'd try to emulate what CM Punk just did. But as he went and hit the back rope, he kind of, just before he did the dive, he hit the second rope. So it was, I don't know, I've always liked Santino's wrestling. He always adds that element of comedy that just...
Excellent.
You don't see that from a lot of people. And just, you know...
Just his mannerisms in the ring just work for his character.
And it was your basic tag match. I mean, Santino was worked over by the heels until CM Punk got the hot tag from Santino. Actually, it was really funny because just before Punk got the hot tag, Santino, he like dived for the tag, but he missed. Now, I don't know if this was intentional on Santino's part or if this was just a botch. If anybody else had done that, it obviously would be considered a botch. But I mean, when you got Santino doing it, you know, was that meant to happen or was that comedy?
That's the beauty of his character. It can go either way.
Exactly. But anyways, CM Punk, he would get the hot tag, and the finish would basically be Punk would hit Cody Rhodes with the clothesline in the corner into the Bulldog, and then he would taunt Daniel Bryan and tell him to come in. Punk would then pick Cody Rhodes up, trying to go for the go to sleep, but Cody would reverse out of it. But Punk would then lay him out with a kick. And Bryan would come in to break up the pin after the kick to the face. Mm-hmm. Punk would then again go to sleep on Bryan, but on Daniel Bryan, but he would escape and he would leave the ring after ducking that Muay Thai kick that CM Punk likes to do.
Yep.
Rhodes then would get in and he'd be tossed into the corner where Santino was, and Santino would kind of like tease the Cobra Strike because he'd be in the corner and he had the Cobra on his arm. But he would, you know, put on the brakes just before he hit the corner. He'd turn around, Punk would pick him up, hit the go to sleep, and that was your finish. Punk pinning Cody Rhodes at about, I don't know, was it 7 or 8 minutes the match was?
No, this progresses CM Punk and Daniel Bryan heading into their match at Over the Limit this Sunday.
But does it really?
That's my question. That does it.
See, again.
Or is this just a time-filling match?
This is where my problem with tonight's Monday Night Raw is. One of the big problems I had, anyways, you had nothing. You had, you know, they had a match, sure, but you had zero build into this program happening between Punk and Bryan. I mean, everybody wants this. Everybody's excited to see this match, but there's no build up for it. Why couldn't Punk cut a promo tonight? Why couldn't Daniel Bryan cut a promo tonight?
Yeah.
You know, it was nothing. I mean, we got a 20-minute cry fest from the Big Show and nothing from Punk and Daniel Bryan? Like, it doesn't make... I don't know. To me, it doesn't make sense.
Here's a question for you. How important is this match to Over the Limit? Are we going to see Punk and Daniel Bryan as the last match on the pay-per-view this Sunday?
No, you're going to see John Cena and John Laurinaitis be the last match.
And do you think that's the way it should be?
If they had done it properly, this match could have been the selling match for Over the Limit.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, this is a match. We've seen these two wrestle before, but we haven't really seen these two go toe-to-toe on a pay-per-view, especially as the main event draw. They had something possibly really special here.
Unless you count Ring of Honor, of course. But.
Well, yeah. But, you know, we're not counting that. And, you know, we're talking like... The hardcore wrestling fans were looking for something special here.
Yes.
And I feel that the magic is not there yet. Maybe we'll see it this Sunday, and maybe it'll be the beginning of future matches on future pay-per-views. But at this point, I'm saying the build for this match is awfully bad.
awfully bad. It's non-existent. Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know, it's awful. Like this, I don't know, this is the match, honestly, that I am, if I was going to pay money for Over the Limit, which I'm not going to, by the way, but if I was, this would be the match that I would pay my money for, would be this match.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm, you know, I'm not excited for it as I should be. It just has not been booked properly.
Yeah.
It's terrible job by creative, and I don't know what else to say.
Well, if there is a reason why you will buy the pay-per-view this Sunday, it will be because of the Divas. And that leads us to our next segment in Monday Night Raw tonight, which was Alicia Fox versus Beth Phoenix.
Oh, so this match pretty much happened right after, didn't it? So yes. So basically, this match was about 45 seconds of Beth Phoenix beating the crap out of Alicia Fox. There was one point where actually Layla would come out and she would scout the match out from the top of the ramp. But basically, the finish came when Beth Phoenix would pick Alicia Fox up and hit a press slam all the while looking at Layla. And then she'd pick her up and do the glam slam for the easy win. And it was like not even 40 seconds, 40, 45 seconds. So, mm-hmm. I mean, come on. We all knew that. It was a bathroom break, essentially.
Jeez, you're harsh tonight.
Well, what do you expect? When you give me crap like that, I'm gonna shit on it, you know?
Unbelievable. I agree, though. The only good part about this match was that we got it out of the way early on.
If you want me to be excited about the Divas and the Divas division, then make me excited. Don't feed me 40-second crap fest and expect me to give a damn about the Divas. I'm sorry.
What's funny is that you can sort of just tell that the Divas are essentially unhappy with the Divas division as well. They don't even like it.
No,
why am I going to watch it if they're not even
exactly? If they're not even interested in doing it, then it's going to be garbage to us, and we're not going to care. Yeah. So I'm sorry.
We are then shown a promo promoting John Cena and his contributions to the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and I had mentioned to you here, James, while we were watching it, that they are just trying everything in their power to make John Cena a good guy again.
Oh, they gotta impress him as the face of the company now that he's, you know, taking his big loss from Rock at the big, you know, at the big show of the year. Of course,
you head into WrestleMania, you're getting booed, you lose to the Rock. So what do you got to do? You throw him up against the monstrous bad guy, Brock Lesnar. You have him beat him, and then you show him ads supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and the crowd starts cheering for him
this,
again.
This is the other thing they do.
The other thing I was going to say was, you know, they held John Cena to the very end of the show tonight, almost as if, like, the fans have just been, like, wondering where he is, and then when he finally shows up in the arena, it's like, well, I guess we're going to cheer for him because we've been waiting for so long for him. It's like they're just they're executing these classic face maneuvers, and it's working. The fans are right behind John Cena all over again.
Well, he's, you know, he is the face of the company, so I don't know what you're going to do there.
And the other thing I was going to say about it is, you know, it is good that they do advertise John Cena and his contributions to that
charity. He does make a lot of charitable contributions, not just to Make-A-Wish, but to Be a Star and other charitable organizations.
It's a positive light in professional wrestling.
This is my thought. It's totally unrelated, actually. But this was my thought after seeing this whole Make-A-Wish video promo. Is in a two-hour Raw show, how much time is spent with video packages and recaps and promo videos and commercials?
We got to time it one day.
Like, I'm thinking you're getting like 45 minutes of commercials and promos and crap while getting maybe an hour and 15 minutes of wrestling. And storyline. Out of that hour and 15 minutes, you're getting maybe, what, 40 minutes, 35 minutes of actual wrestling?
I bet you the numbers would be a little more harsh than that, actually.
To me, it's mind-blowing. Nope, it really is.
Thank God for the PVR.
Exactly.
We are then told about the Over the Limit pre-show, which this will take place half hour before on YouTube, Facebook, and WWE.com, where the big match we will see, promoting the pay-per-view, we're actually going to see Zack Ryder versus Kane. Now, we've talked about this YouTube pre-show that they're going to be doing before pay-per-views. I think it's an excellent idea.
I totally agree with you. We've talked about this on previous shows again, and yeah, I think the pre-show idea is very good. Again, this is my problem with the booking the WWE has. Here we have Zack Ryder going against Kane,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, this is a match that should have happened like 2 months ago to close off their feud, or there should have been some kind of closure to that.
Yeah.
And now they're feeding it to us now? It doesn't make... You know what I mean? It's just... I don't know, man. Just between me and you, I just want a little bit of logic.
This half-hour pre-show could be something very good for them. Do not drop the ball by feeding us useless matches that no one cares to see. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I'm not saying Zack Ryder versus Kane is a useless match, but there's no hype for it. No. There's nothing heading into this match.
Nobody cares. That's the problem.
If they really want to promote these pre-shows, the best thing you could do is to have a title change on the YouTube show.
I totally agree with you. That would immediately
legitimize.
Yes, thank you. That would immediately make you go, oh man, maybe I got to catch this pre-show. Something interesting could happen. You know.
Yeah. Don't feed us a superstars quality match.
No.
That would be my suggestion. I love this idea that they're doing this free online show half hour before the pay-per-view, trying to convince you to buy the pay-per-view. I think that's an excellent idea, but you got to give me something. You got to give me a reason to want to go to it, right? Zack Ryder versus Kane as a nothing match is not a reason for me to go.
Okay, I got to ask you a question, being you're in the television business and stuff like that. Having a pre-show, having a half an hour pre-show, does that really help the crews behind the scene kind of, you know, tighten down the hatches and get ready to...
It's a warm-up, right?
Is it?
You got to remember, like, the show is set up anyways. Mm-hmm. The production crew is in place. The money is already spent for the pay-per-view. So anything you do prior to this, it's all free content. Because the guys are there anyways. The crew's being paid.
No, I understand that. But I mean, I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to allude at is I've been reading reports that there's not really good communication between the direction team maybe and the production team. So I'm just wondering if maybe that's why...
In what aspect?
Just like music's going off at the wrong time. Sometimes pyro's not on cue.
That's beyond my realm. That's something that they have to discuss behind the scenes.
You know, but I'm just saying, would a half-hour pre-show, would that help in that aspect?
For sure. Okay. It's a warm-up
for
everyone.
That's what I'm alluding to.
Yeah, no, and again, it's coming at no cost because everything's already there anyways.
Right.
Right? That's like NXT and Superstars. It's essentially a free show to produce because those shows are being produced for Raw and SmackDown anyways.
I see.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I see.
And it's a total warm-up for not only the wrestlers in the ring, but it's a warm-up for the production crew, the people behind the scenes. It's a win-win. And you're getting free programming on YouTube promoting your pay-per-view, guaranteeing you're probably going to get a few extra 100 buys, you know, maybe 1,000, of people who are tuning into this and like, oh, maybe I will order the pay-per-view today.
Mm.
It's a win-win. But if you want people to go there, you're going to need to do more than just a lower third graphic on the bottom of the screen talking about the YouTube show.
Got to make us interested.
Got to give us a reason to go
to it. Exactly.
Title change, I'm telling you. Moving on, we are shown a promo video of The Big Show, apparently making fun of John Laurinaitis' voice last week. And I got to say, James, I didn't even really think he made fun of John Laurinaitis' voice.
Oh, I just hate this whole thing that they're doing with Big Show and John Laurinaitis. It's just...
All right,
well. It's almost on Kane John Cena hate level.
Well, let me get through it first, and then you can give your opinion on it. We shown the video, shows making fun of Laurinaitis' voice. Eve is telling Big Show to apologize. We're then shown a video of Laurinaitis stopping Big Show's match on SmackDown against Daniel Bryan last week, and how he didn't think Big Show's apology on Monday Night Raw was sincere last week. So, you know, there's some stipulations for Big Show tonight on Raw. Heading out live into the arena, John Laurinaitis walks out with David Otunga. They sit down at the commentator's table, and Laurinaitis immediately starts texting on his cell phone. Big Show's music hits. He walks out. Kane walks out. And it's worth mentioning here that the Big Show must apologize to John Laurinaitis tonight, or he'll be fired from the WWE. This would set up Big Show versus Kane.
Yeah, I mean, this match was your... you know, expected technical masterpiece between two big guys.
Yeah.
No, not really. But basically, it was all back and forth until the end of the match, which was basically, you know, Show would hit a clothesline onto Kane and then pick him up for a really awkward-looking scoop slam. He almost kind of fell, didn't he?
Hmm.
Anyway, Big Show would then go to the second rope, and he'd try to do the splash, but Kane would move out of the way. Kane would then actually go up to the top rope, jump down, but Show would grab him, attempt to go for a choke slam, but Kane would then fight it off. But Show would then grab him and toss Kane out of the ring. Show would then, you know, leave the ring to go to get Kane, and he would toss him out into the barrier and then spear him on the floor. Show would then actually grab Kane, toss him back into the ring, and it was at this point that John Laurinaitis would get up, grab a microphone, and right in the middle of the match, tell the Big Show that he wants his apology right now. You have to apologize to me right now. And as he's distracting the Big Show, the Show would turn around and, like, I don't know. That was the weakest looking chokeslam I've ever seen. It was basically Big Show jumping up and selling the maneuver before Kane could actually do it.
Yeah.
But they actually went with it, and that was the finish. It was the botched chokeslam. Kane would get the win for 1-2-3, and then this would set up the absolute worst segment of the night.
I didn't mind this segment. Oh. After the match was over, Laurinaitis, who has a microphone, he's demanding an apology right now from the Big Show. And Big Show grabs a mic and he says, "Johnny, I've been thinking long and hard about what I'm going to say tonight. You know, when I broke into the WCW, I was 23 years old. For the past 18 years, I've done it all. He even had a WrestleMania moment, finally. There's a part of me that can walk away with my head held high, no regrets. The truth is, I love what I do. I love waking up performing for you. It's not about the matches. It's coming down the aisle, seeing the looks on those kids' faces." He's really hamming it up here, James.
The crowd is just going, "Big Show, Big Show, Big Show," you know, at this point.
The friendships and the bonds that he's made in the back. "Johnny, don't erase the last 18 years of his life for something petty. You want to fine him? All right, fine. You want to bar him from ever having a championship match again? Fine. If Big Show imitating your voice offended you, he's sorry. But if there's an ounce of decency in you, you will continue to let the Big Show do what he loves." I'm speaking. This is what Big Show said.
Yeah.
I'm speaking on behalf of him there. John Laurinaitis.
You're his Paul Heyman.
That's right. I'm representing him.
You're representing the Big Show.
Now, John Laurinaitis does say, you know, "Show, that was passionate, but I didn't hear you say I'm sorry," which I'm pretty sure he did. And all those people in the cheap seats and in the back, they couldn't hear you either. Big Show does say, "I'm sorry." And Laurinaitis says, "Okay, you did say it, but now you're going to prove it. You want to keep your job? Get on your knees and beg me." And Big Show struggles with this decision for 1 minute too long.
And Laurinaitis is just getting wicked, wicked crowd heat right now. Mm-hmm. The crowd is just hating him. They are booing like crazy.
And Big Show says, "You want me to beg? Fine, I'll beg. Johnny, I'm sorry. Please don't make me do that, though. Don't make me get on my knees." And Laurinaitis responds with, "Look at you. You disgust me.
So bad.
I will do what's right for business, not for you, and not for them," pointing to the fans, "because I always do what's best for business, but maybe I'll reconsider." Johnny walks to the top of the entranceway. He's about to fire the Big Show, but Big Show stops him, drops to his knees crying, and he does apologize to John Laurinaitis again, and Laurinaitis asks him what he's apologizing for, and Show apologizes for making fun of his voice and says he'll never do it again. "Are you happy now?" And Laurinaitis ponders it over and says, "No, I'm not. As GM of both Raw and SmackDown, I wish you the best in your future endeavors." Ugh. And then Laurinaitis smiles and he says, "Show, you're fired." And the segment ends with Big Show being left on his knees in the middle of the ring crying. All right, let's get into it.
20 minutes of the Big Show crying, no Punk, no Daniel. What? WTF. That's all.
I just don't know where they're going with this.
Okay, two things. Two things immediately popped into my brain after watching this segment. Number one, Big Show needs to turn heel. Like, this babyface thing, this but smiling,
you can't
kid,
have him
kid
turn
loving
heel.
Big. Why not?
Because he's dealing with John Laurinaitis.
You got to turn him heel sometime. I mean, it's not working for him. The babyface thing, he's one of these guys, honestly, that is way better as a monster heel than he is as the smiling babyface. It's becoming stale.
You also have to remember, though, that Big Show's star quality is not his actual in-ring ability. It's everything he brings to the WWE outside the ring. It's when he's walking around the arena, or it's when he's in the public eye outside of Monday Night Raw. He's this larger-than-life guy. People are just in awe at how big he is. It's not about what he's doing on the show. It's what he's doing outside the ring.
So we have to suffer with bad in-ring product?
Yes.
Because he's good on the outside public relations? Is that what you're telling me?
I don't think he's terrible in-ring.
No, he's not terrible in-ring. He just needs to change.
You're just saying that. You're saying this because he's had a very long career. That's why. You're saying you've seen... I mean, if you think about it, we've been seeing the Big Show for years.
Let me put this to you. How many times have we seen the Big Show cry in 2012?
One time too many.
Oh, it's ridiculous. You should not be seeing a guy like the Big Show bawling his eyes out multiple times.
He's pretty good at it, though. It's Oscar award winning.
No, I think it's terrible acting. And the second thing that I was going to get at, the second thing that was coming to my mind was, we are seeing way too much John Laurinaitis on TV.
Way too much tonight, for
sure. Way too much. It's getting to the point where he's overexposed. Yes, you know, don't get me wrong. I do like John Laurinaitis. I like the role that he's in. But it's coming to the point now where it's almost becoming annoying that we're seeing him in almost segment after segment after segment. We're seeing him on TV.
I agree with you. We are seeing too much John Laurinaitis. I did like this segment tonight. And the reason why I liked it was because they just... It was the little things that made this segment work. The fact that, you know, Big Show, he would pretend, or, you know, he would make everyone think that he was going to get on his knees, and then he wasn't, and then he was going to, and he was really struggling with the decision personally.
Way too long. I hated it. This whole segment was crap.
I liked it.
Crap. This whole segment was crap.
Okay.
Garbage.
Just relax over there. No, but then, you know, you think the segment's over. Laurinaitis walks up to the entranceway, and then, you know, he's about to fire him, which was going to take everyone by surprise. And then, you know, Big Show, he caves and he does it anyways. And then in the end, it doesn't matter. Laurinaitis is still firing him. I just thought these little things and the extra time that they gave for this segment was justified, because I liked. How those two played off each other. Mm-hmm. I think Laurinaitis and Big Show did a really good job of playing off each other. What I don't like about this segment is, where are they going with it? I thought we were dealing with Laurinaitis and John Cena heading into this Sunday. Where does the Big Show come from here?
Well, he just got fired, so maybe he'll be off TV for a while.
I mean, if that's the reason, if this is something to do outside the show, and Big Show needs time off
or something.
Maybe. Yeah, and if that's the case, it's a good way to put Laurinaitis over as a heel, for sure. But what I'm saying is you're just confusing me as to what is Laurinaitis doing right now? Who is he aiming for? Who is he targeting? He's got something going on with CM Punk. He's got something going on with the Big Show. He's supposedly have a match this Sunday with John Cena.
He's everywhere.
There's too many of this.
He's everywhere.
Too much TV time for John Laurinaitis.
It's too much. He's involved everywhere.
But I liked the segment with him and Big Show. I thought they played off each other perfectly.
I totally disagree with you. I thought it was...
We know, James.
I thought it was a 20-minute waste of my life. I really do.
Okay. All right. Brodus Clay's music hits. And the ladies, they walk out wearing green tonight, followed by Brodus himself, and they make their way to the ring. The tag team champions, Kofi Kingston and R-Truth, they make their way to the ring. And Miz, Ziggler, and Jack Swagger, accompanied by Vicky Guerrero, they walk out to the ring. Now, this is setting up a six-man tag match, your personal favorite, James.
Oh, I love these ones.
And this is Brodus Clay, Kofi Kingston, and R-Truth versus Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger, and The Miz.
Actually, this was a shorter match than I thought it was going to be, but the match would start out with R-Truth and Jack Swagger in the ring, and just before they cut to the commercial break, there is a spot where The Miz got knocked over the top rope by a double clothesline by Kofi and R-Truth. And then as we came back from the commercial break, it was actually R-Truth in a headlock by Dolph Ziggler, and he did his, you know, his show-off handstand while doing the headlock. I don't know. You know what? There wasn't enough Dolph Ziggler on this show for me, personally.
Oh, I don't think there's ever enough Dolph Ziggler on the show. Right. I'm still waiting for him to get this main event push, and it just hasn't happened.
You know, we could go the whole show about this. But anyways, throughout this whole match, actually, Corey, they were cutting to a luxury box. You saw they're cutting to a luxury box in the upper level that had Abraham Washington, that they're now calling AW, and his, what are they calling now? His all world team or something?
I don't remember.
It's like it's something all world. You know what? That's how exciting it is. It's that we can't even remember it.
Doesn't even matter.
25 minutes after seeing it.
Well, here's my problem with this is, who is AW? Like, is he really that convincing as a leader of a stable? And what has he accomplished for these wrestlers to want to join up with him?
Nothing. They've done nothing.
It doesn't work with a new guy that no one's ever heard of. You know what I mean? Like, yes, yeah, we saw him before in the past, but he hasn't done anything to warrant being the leader of this stable of people.
Hey.
Like, if you're Epico, Primo, and Rosa Mendez, you've done more than Abraham Washington. So why are you wanting to align yourself with this guy?
Exactly. It just, again, no logic in the writing. And it shows. It shows in the product. Mm-hmm. But anyways, going back to the match, the basic finish of the match was it was basically back and forth with Ziggler and Truth. Again, they cut to the skybox again for, you know, no reason. But anyways, The Miz would come in. He'd continue attacking R-Truth. Kofi then would get the hot tag and start unloading on The Miz. He'd hit his diving elbow off the top rope and a couple clotheslines. Kofi would then actually hit the SOS on The Miz, which is a what you were mentioning is a pretty dangerous looking move.
Mm-hmm.
He'd get the two count, but it'd be broken up by Swagger. Ziggler and Swagger then would actually be tossed over the ropes. I kind of missed how that happens, but Ziggler actually ran into a big headbutt by Brodus Clay, as Clay was standing on the apron, by the way. Clay then would tag himself in as Kofi hits the Trouble in Paradise on The Miz. He'd then run to the ropes, hit his big body splash, and that was the finish of the match. And it was actually quite a short match.
That Ziggler running up to Brodus Clay, and then he receives that headbutt, that's just like, it's crazy. That Ziggler just like runs right at him as hard as he can, and Brodus Clay just sends him to the mat. Like, it's just, it really works. Ziggler is still the best at taking bumps.
I saw a funny picture of Dolph Ziggler on the internet the other day. It had the caption, "Sells better than TNA tickets." So...
Works. Yeah, I like it.
Totally works.
Your thoughts on this match?
Not enough Ziggler. Not enough Swagger.
What are we accomplishing with this?
Nothing.
Yeah.
You're accomplishing nothing. I mean, yeah, they've got a tag match, you know, heading into Sunday, but this is complete filler garbage.
My question to you earlier tonight was, if Brodus Clay loses in a 6-man tag match, does that count as the streak being over?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I would say so. That counts as a loss.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So if if one of your teammates loses, you lose as well.
I'm just throwing it out there.
And that's why, you know, Clay had to pick up the win.
Yeah. The Miz, 2 weeks in a row.
Keep that undefeated streak going.
We are backstage with CM Punk and, of all people, A-Rai, Alex Riley.
Yeah.
And they're walking backstage, and AJ, Daniel Bryan's ex-girlfriend, walks up to CM Punk. A-Rai walks away.
Says, good luck with this one. Then Punk turns to him and goes, hey, don't forget about that 50 you owe me.
And AJ says to CM Punk, I just wanted to say good luck on Sunday. And Punk says, I don't want to get involved between you and your boyfriend or ex-boyfriend or whatever you guys are. I don't need that drama. You've been pretty unstable as of late, so I'll see you later.
It was basically, bitch, please. That's basically what it was.
And AJ's just looking like she's throwing herself at CM Punk. It's just, like, why? Is this going to be a focal point of the match on Sunday?
I think we're going to see AJ get involved in the CM Punk Daniel Bryan match in some aspect. I don't know if she'll be involved in the finish. I don't know. Maybe she will.
See this match and don't have her influence a match of this caliber.
The way that creative is writing stuff right now, nothing. I'm telling you, nothing would surprise me.
Daniel Bryan versus Great Khali, and you need someone to influence the ending of the match because it's Khali that's in it. Fine, put AJ as the main reason why Daniel Bryan wins or loses.
Yeah.
But you got two guys who are capable of putting on an excellent match.
Oh, a barn burner. Don't ruin it. Tear the roof down.
Ugh, so frustrating.
And then you're going to have AJ involved. Woo! Yeah. No, but again, you know what? Like I said, I still like the dynamic between AJ and Daniel Bryan, but do I want to see her influence the end of this match? No.
All right.
Definitely not.
Well, we agree on that at least. Sheamus's music hits. He walks out, sits down at the commentator's table. Jericho's music hits. Chris Jericho, that is. He walks out. Randy Orton's music hits. He walks out to the ring, and this would set up a 1-on-1 match of Randy Orton versus Y2J, Chris Jericho.
Yeah, so basically the start of the match was they'd lock up, and Orton would actually take Jericho down first. It was Orton with a little bit more offense, a couple of quick pin attempts. Orton would hit a drop kick and a clothesline that would send Jericho actually out to the floor. Orton would then, of course, you know, stand tall in the ring and look at Sheamus as they'd cut to commercial. Now, coming back from the commercial, they'd actually show a little promo of something that happened during the break where Jericho used the ref as a distraction and kind of took control over Orton on that way. And as we come back from break, it was actually Jericho with a headlock rest spot, and he turned it into a kitchen sink. And it was basically Jericho in control for a lot of the match until Orton regained it by, you know, using some punches and kicks. And essentially the finish came when Orton would reverse a lion salt. Jericho, Orton was down on the mat, and Orton would go for his springboard lion salt there. Orton would move out of the way, and he'd turn it into his moveset, you know, the one where he does two clotheslines, and then in that backbreaker he does. And then he'd go for the draping DDT, but Jericho would actually reverse it into a back body drop, tossing Orton over the top rope. Jericho would then actually leave the ring, grab Orton, and toss him into Sheamus, who was actually sitting beside Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler doing commentary. So yeah, it was kind of a neat little thing there where he tossed him into into Sheamus, and then he'd pick him up, bring him back into the ring, and he'd actually hit the draping DDT onto Jericho. But it was at this point that Sheamus would get up, grab Jericho, and drag him out of the ring, clothesline him down, and it was at this point that the ref would throw the match out, disqualification.
Because Sheamus had been involved.
Because Sheamus had actually clotheslined Jericho on the outside. Mm-hmm. So the match got thrown out as a disqualification. And then you'd see Orton and Sheamus arguing on the outside as Jericho slinks away. And then Orton was actually challenging Sheamus to get in the ring. Let's do it right now. And so they did. They actually both got in the ring, and they're about to go at it. And then the refs would pull them apart, and that would be kind of the end of the segment there.
Do you think this is the last... Do you think this storyline with Punk and Jericho that's just concluded, is that the last major program we see Jericho involved in before he leaves?
I think maybe we'll see one more major program, but then again, I don't know.
Who would it be against? I mean, there's a Fatal 4-Way this Sunday. You got Jericho, Randy Orton, Sheamus, and Alberto Del Rio. You didn't even see Del Rio tonight on the show.
Yeah, Del Rio was...
Oh, was he on Raw tonight? No.
No, you're right. I was thinking of SmackDown, sorry.
Yeah, so, you know, it looks like you have Randy Orton and Sheamus heading into a program after Sunday.
Heading into a few, which is interesting because they're both baby faces.
But then that would leave Jericho and Del Rio. I don't know. It's just, I'm wondering, like, are we going to see more of Jericho, or is he just going to dissolve into the darkness and then walk away from the WWE?
I don't know. What would you think about maybe putting Jericho with somebody like Brodus Clay to give Brodus Clay the shine? You know, maybe put, you know, have that star power to maybe put Clay over that, just that little bit more.
But then Jericho has basically come back and jobbed to Punk, jobbed to Brodus Clay, and he's taken off.
I don't know. I'm just trying to think like
no
WWE creative right now.
For me, I think it's more likely that you're going to see Jericho or Del Rio win this Sunday, and you're going to see Del Rio and Jericho go for the belt for a couple months. That's what I think you're going to see.
You're going to have two heels go at it.
You seem to think that Sheamus is going to walk out of the Fatal 4-Way as a champion.
Honestly, the only other person other than Sheamus I can see walking out of that match with the belt would be Randy Orton.
And I don't want to see that because I've seen it a million times.
Exactly.
It's stale to me.
So. Del Rio and Jericho, I really can't see them putting the belt on those two guys. I could be wrong. I mean, I've been wrong before.
I think if you are going to have Jericho go into a program with Del Rio, it's got you got to put the belt in there. Otherwise, there's no real reason for those two to go at each other. So that's what I'm thinking. That's my early prediction.
Could be right, yeah.
Regardless, this brings us to the final segment of tonight's Monday Night Raw, and I'm sure we're going to find out that it's James's favorite.
No, it was terrible, and I'll tell you why after. Go ahead.
John Laurinaitis walks out. He calls John Cena a loser. He makes reference to Cena losing to The Rock at WrestleMania, looking like a loser at Extreme Rules to Brock Lesnar, and then says that when he defeats John Cena this Sunday at Over the Limit, he will prove that all of John Cena's fans are also losers. But without losers, there wouldn't be winners like him. So therefore, it's at this point that John Cena's music cuts him off. Cena walks out to a very positive reaction tonight. And he has a microphone and he walks up to John Laurinaitis and he smells him. And he says, "Desperation is such a stinky cologne, Laurinaitis." And immediately I'm thinking, oh my God. We are no longer seeing a serious John Cena.
No.
We are seeing the guy who thinks he's a comedian.
He's right back to the old swarmy, happy-go-lucky John Cena that he's always been. Nothing's changed.
John Cena makes fun of John Laurinaitis' voice, calls him a scumbag, and after he fired Big Show earlier tonight, he became the king of douchebaggery. It's just not funny to me. He says, let's run down Laurinaitis' track record. At WrestleMania, your team, yeah, it won, but you did nothing. You wanted CM Punk removed as champion. Well, he's still champion. And then his crowning achievement, Laurinaitis' crowning achievement, was to bring back Brock Lesnar to beat John Cena. But Brock lost, and he quit. That would make Laurinaitis 1-for-4. And that doesn't make him a winner. That makes him a loser. After asking the crowd a couple of questions, Cena references Pittsburgh Steel Curtain, which is a group of men who decimate, hurt, and destroy their opponents. Which is what Cena's going to do to Laurinaitis at Over the Limit. Cena brings up the Pittsburgh Penguins and says John Laurinaitis... Laurinaitis says he was going to reference the Pittsburgh Penguins in his promo later on, but now Cena's stealing his material. And every time John Laurinaitis would actually talk here, Cena would cut him off with the word loser. which is so pathetic in my opinion.
No reaction for the Pittsburgh Penguins either.
No. Well, why would you? They're out. John Cena wants to hear how Laurinaitis was going to reference the Pittsburgh Penguins, and Laurinaitis responds by calling them losers. Everyone's losers here tonight, apparently. John Cena actually takes a hockey puck out of his pocket, I think it was, and he throws it to Laurinaitis, and he says, go puck yourself. And John Laurinaitis...
More terrible comedy. Terrible!
And John Laurinaitis replies by saying, you know, it bothers Cena that Laurinaitis is taller than him and better looking than him.
Well, he is.
And as a GM, I won't even go there. As GM, John Laurinaitis, he can change a match, add a stipulation, do whatever he wants. It's at this point where Eve Torres actually runs down to the ring and interrupts John Laurinaitis as he's saying, as Laurinaitis is proving the amount of power that he has. And Eve actually hands him a piece of paper. John Cena ends up grabbing the paper out of Laurinaitis' hands.
Tears it in two.
Yes.
Bad boy.
And I guess Cena just knows what the letter's about. The missing half, he just knows.
Yeah.
Regardless, so the letter that Eve handed Laurinaitis and that Cena stole, it's actually a letter from the board of directors, and John Cena reads it out loud. And it says that their match at Over the Limit, Laurinaitis versus John Cena, it's going to be one-on-one, no special guest referee, no woman is allowed at ringside, the only way to win is by pinfall or submission, and any superstar who interferes in the match will be immediately terminated. Yeah, well, you know, Arnold's ringside, I guess. And if John Laurinaitis loses the match, he will be terminated. Cena's music hits. Cena cuts it off by saying he wants to hear what Laurinaitis wanted to announce. And John Laurinaitis ends up slapping John Cena as Raw goes off the air.
Terrible. I hated all of this. Okay. Absolute garbage. You know why?
Let's hear it.
The number one reason I hated this segment, John Cena's arm was fine. No sling, no nothing. Here you have a guy 2 weeks ago, his arm's in a sling. He had the crap beaten out of his arm. He had his arm hit with the steel ring steps, the steel chair. You know, last week on Raw, he said he has to drain his elbow twice a day.
And was that last week he said that?
That was last week. Last week he said he has to drain his elbow twice a day. And he comes out and he's all fine tonight. You know, no bandages, no... So basically what I'm getting at is that...
Two words, James. Super Cena.
No, the selling of injuries all around is a joke. Like, look at Sheamus. His arm was fine tonight, all of a sudden, for no reason.
Yeah.
You know, no sell that injury. Then you got Triple H, you know, his arm's in this big brace, yet he's moving it all around, doing all these... It's a joke. Like, if you're not going to make it believable, we're not going to believe it. That's just what I'm getting down to, number one.
What else didn't you like about this segment?
Well, that was the big one for me.
Yeah. My biggest problem with this is you have a John Cena trying to be a comedian. He's not funny. He's over the top terrible.
Yes, that's the other thing I didn't like about this segment is we're right back to the old John Cena character. There's been absolutely zero change for what's happened to him in these last few months. You know, you'd like to see maybe his character develop a little bit more, become a little bit more dynamic of a character. But no, it's just the exact same comedy spewing, you know, Super Cena crap that we've all come to hate.
Why are we even doing this match of Cena versus Laurinaitis at Over the Limit? It's obvious that they're giving Cena a break on television and they're giving other wrestlers an opportunity to shine. Why do we need to put this match on Over the Limit? Just because you need to have Cena's name attached to a pay-per-view?
Well, I'm almost thinking that maybe they want to kind of push maybe Laurinaitis out of the picture.
To progress
the whole Brock Lesnar program. See, this is what I was trying to get at. Earlier in the program, we were talking about Triple H and Brock Lesnar. Maybe now they have John Laurinaitis lose this match at Over the Limit against John Cena, and then you can have Triple H come back to Paul Heyman and say, well, whatever verbal agreement that those two came to, it's now null and void because now he's not the now he's not the general manager of both
so
shows.
So you're saying if Laurinaitis loses on Sunday and he is fired, that Brock Lesnar doesn't have a leg to stand on?
Basically, and that could be one way they push the storyline forward.
But to me, aside from the fact that... You know, they're giving Laurinaitis too much TV time. I actually think he's good on television. Just his facial expressions tonight with Cena were very good.
He's definitely getting better. I will give you that.
I liked how he acted in the final segment tonight. I didn't like how Cena acted. I liked Laurinaitis. He looked serious. He looked intense. Mm-hmm. I just thought he did a really good job. And he was soaking up these boos from the crowd in a way that he still looked well, powerful.
Let's face it, he's the biggest heat magnet they got right now.
Well, nobody, aside from Vicky Guerrero.
Not even Vicky Guerrero. Nobody gets more heat than John Laurinaitis at this point.
And I know. And why would you take him off television at this point?
I don't know. I'm just saying that's one possible way they could go forward. I honestly don't think Laurinaitis is going to lose the match at Over the Limit. I think he's going to
win.
He's going to win somehow.
Well, I'm thinking that if you are going to send John Cena on a holiday, you know, you're going to do it here.
Yeah.
Right? You're not going to get rid of Laurinaitis. Let's be realistic. You're not taking this guy off television. You don't spend the last 2.5 years or whatever it was building this guy up to being what he is now.
And he's involved in like 3 different storylines simultaneously. So, I mean, you can't really get rid of somebody like that. I do see what you're saying.
But then, on the other hand, I can see what you're saying. You have Laurinaitis get fired, and everything that Lesnar's demanding is out the door. Big Show is reinstated.
Exactly.
Like, everything just goes back to normal, like Laurinaitis was never even there.
Exactly.
That would be almost the WWE way of doing things.
And like I said, you know what? The way the creative is putting things together and booking their shows these days totally would not surprise me. Hmm. I don't know. Personally, all in all, I thought Raw tonight was terrible. Nothing made sense, and it was just it almost felt insulting to me personally.
And okay, well, let me ask you this then: what would be the most interesting match heading into Over the Limit this Sunday?
Oh, easily Daniel Bryan and CM Punk.
Yeah.
Oh, easily.
Even though you have a feeling that AJ is going to be involved.
Whether she gets involved or not, I'm still interested in the match. I don't want to see her involved in the finish or anything, but that's definitely the match of the card for me.
Hmm.
What about you?
I would say that it's interesting that Laurinaitis versus John Cena has these stipulations added where no one can interfere, mm-hmm. no one can be at ringside, or no girl can be at ringside. It's a one-on-one. To me, I'm interested in how does Laurinaitis beat John Cena?
He'll figure out a way.
Think so?
I think so. Like I said, like I just said 5 minutes ago, he's involved in way too many storylines to have him all of a sudden.
No, there's no question in my mind that Laurinaitis walks out.
Yeah.
That being said, this is the WWE.
Nothing would surprise me at this point.
I'm sure we'll give our pay-per-view predictions on the upcoming edition of Smack Talk Radio Live, which will be happening this Thursday.
That's right. We will run down the amazing Over the Limit card and give our predictions. And
if you thought we were positive here tonight, folks,
wait till Thursday.
We actually do have a really good interview planned for Thursday. Vance Nevada, who is a independent wrestler in Canada, instrumental with wrestling up here.
Huge name, and just in Canadian wrestling mm-hmm. altogether.
He also has a big influence. He was part of our Cauliflower Alley Club special.
That's right.
He actually has a book that's out, and I've seen this book. It's amazing. It's all about wrestling in Canada. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a must-hear interview. It's taking place on Thursday.
The one thing about Vance is he's very much a wrestling historian.
Yeah, oh. Is he ever?
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about it Thursday. But his book, crazy how much he wrote of his own. So, like, because there's a bunch of facts about different organizations across Canada. And I asked him, where'd you get all this information from? He said, the top of my head.
Yeah, it's going to be a good show.
Anyways, www.smacktalkradiolive.com, facebook.com/smacktalkradio, or if you're hip and cool to the scene, at SRL Radio on Twitter. We had no viewer emails tonight about Monday Night Raw. Can you believe it?
People, get on it. On air at smacktalkradiolive.com. Crap on Monday Night Raw as much as we do. We want to hear it.
Or we want to hear your positivity, because obviously the guy sitting to my right is not very positive.
I'm sorry. There's nothing to be positive about. Come on.
So shut this guy up and send us an email. How about that? I'm Corey Callahan.
I am James McDonald.
And we'll see ya on Thursday.
Don't you dare miss it. This is Smack Talk Radio Live. Time and time again, it's times like these you learn to live again. It's times like these you give and give again. It's times like these you learn to love again. It's times like these, time and time again. It's times like these you learn to live again. It's times like these you give and give again. It's times like these you learn to love again. It's times like these, time and time.